Committee will please come to order. Please call the roll.
Representative Tallarico?
Here.
Representative Stutes?
Here.
Representative Keller?
Here.
Representative Gruenberg? Representative Vasquez?
Yeah, and she's here. She's going to be late, I believe.
Representative Price Tompkins? Chair Lynn?
I am here. Thank you very much, everybody. Today we have two items on our agenda: HB 56, Alaska Firefighters Day, and HB 22, Probation and Parole Officers Caseloads. And so we're going to begin with HB 56. I'm one of the sponsors of that bill, so I'm going to ask Vice Chair Keller to please take the gavel.
Dueling gavels.
Yeah, dueling gavels. But I got the big one.
Okay, we have the original version of HB 56 in front of us. Would you care to present your bill?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm going to make a brief opening statement and ask my assistant here, Esther Milkey, to present the bill to us. First of all, most of us run away from fires. Firefighters don't run away from fires. Firefighters run to fires and go inside burning buildings and try to rescue people there at the risk of their own lives. They fight huge forest fires. Firefighters were there during the Good Friday earthquake. That's what people think of usually when they think of firefighters, but that's not all. Firefighting isn't their only skill. Firefighters are first responders to medical emergencies. People fall. Firefighters pick them up, take them to the emergency room if needed. Firefighters save lives with CPR and save lives with defibrillators. They use the jaws of life to rescue moms and dads and kids from automobile accidents. They even collect funds for charities. We have a lot of challenges and opportunities in Alaska, we all know that. But if we don't survive fires and other emergencies, those challenges and opportunities are moot, at least for the victims. This bill is to honor Alaska firefighters with their own special day. They deserve it. Not much more needs to be said, and my staff will detail the bill for you.
Thank you, Representative Lynn. And for the record, Representative Christ Tompkins joined us about 4 minutes after. Any questions for the sponsor? Okay, we'll go to Esther, if you would, introduce yourself for the record. And she's brand new at this, so make sure you think of your toughest questions.
For the record, my name is Esther Milkey, staff to Representative Bob Lynn. House Bill 56 is a bill to establish Alaska Firefighters Day. This will be a day set aside to honor firefighters in Alaska and thank them for the work that they do to keep us safe around the clock. HB 56 would designate the Sunday preceding October 9th as Alaska Firefighters Day. We chose this date in particular because it marks the beginning of National Fire Prevention Week, which was established to commemorate the Great Chicago Fire of 1871. We hope this bill will help all Alaskans remember to take the time to appreciate and thank the firefighters who keep us safe every day.
Okay. Any questions? Seeing none. Does anyone want to testify on HB 56 in the room? Seeing none, we'll go online. We have Kelly Nicolo? Nicolo. No, Nicolello? There we go. State Fire Marshal.
Nicolello, sir.
Okay. If you would, identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
For the record, my name is Kelly Nicolello. I'm the director of the Department of Public Safety, Division of Fire and Life Safety, commonly referred to as the Alaska State Fire Marshal. Mr. Chair, it's my pleasure to testify on behalf of this bill. There are approximately 1,500 firefighters across the state made up of career, municipal, borough, wildland, and airport firefighters. Then there are about 6,000 volunteer municipal, borough, village, and wildland firefighters. All are considered professionals who serve their communities with their heart, soul, pocketbooks, and sometimes even their lives. The vast majority of firefighters are volunteers who have other full-time careers. All firefighters dedicate many extra hours to learn, train, equip, and respond to local emergency situations. Little or nothing is asked for in material return for their community services, nor does the general public understand the sacrifice of time and commitment it takes for their service. Firefighters have a deep pride in what they do. Their self-respect and satisfaction comes from knowing they make an immediate and impactful difference when someone is having one of their worst moments. They make things right, they console, they save lives and property. And if you ask any one of them, that's good enough for them. But I have to tell you, Mr. Chair, respect and appreciation for their service is a currency they truly appreciate. When that appreciation is raised to a state level by their elected officials, it becomes an investment in their future work and provides a huge return on the investment for your recognition of the people they serve and duties they perform. The recognition of Alaska Firefighter Day is a great way to demonstrate that their personal involvement means more than what happens locally. The service they perform has a direct impact on the quality of life of those around them and is recognized as a positive contribution to Alaska as a whole. I think it is appropriate to recognize Alaska Firefighters Day during the Fire Prevention Week. It is a week we remember those firefighters who have lost their lives in the performance of their duties. We concentrate on the education of children in the principles of fire safety throughout the schools and community organizations. And what a better day than a Sunday to thank God for what they do and show them the appreciation they deserve. I would ask you to move HB 56 forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. Any questions for the fire marshal? I don't see any. Thank you for calling in. Representative Stutz?
No question.
No. We'll have more public testimony.
Okay.
So, Jeff Tucker, are you online?
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jeff Tucker. I'm the second vice president of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Associations, and I want to we're calling it today to support House Bill 56. I want to thank Representative Lynn and the others who sponsored this legislation. As Fire Marshal McMahon most eloquently put it, the firefighters across Alaska sacrifice a lot to provide the services to their communities. We already have days when the fire service worries about that we honor those who have fallen in the fire service. I think it's extremely important that we have an act, a day that celebrates the Alaska firefighters and their commitments and their services they do to the communities. We take for granted sometimes that these folks are out there doing their jobs until we need them, and it's appropriate for us Alaskans to take a day and pause and celebrate their services to our communities. And again, on behalf of the Alaska Fire Chiefs Association, we support this legislation and thank the co-sponsors.
Thank you, Jeff. I don't see any questions at this time. Representative Grunberg has joined us at 10 after the hour. Is anybody else online that wants to testify on HB 56? Anybody in the room? If not, we'll close public testimony at this time, and it comes before the committee. Committee debate, discussions, actions. Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair. I'd like to move House Bill 56, version 29-LS0241, line A, from committee with individual recommendations and zero fiscal notes.
Seeing no objection, the bill passes. It's the chair bringing forth these controversial bills so early in the session. I just want to point out to the committee, you got these little green slips in front if you want them.
And I'd like to thank the committee for passing the bill.
Okay, great. We're going to take it at ease, and when we come back, it'll be the chair.
Affairs Committee will please come back to order. We're here on our second bill today, HB 22, that probation and parole officers' caseloads. And with that, I've asked a sponsor to come forward and please introduce the bill to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Chris Tuck, serving South Central Anchorage. I want to thank the committee and you, Mr. Chair, for allowing me to present House Bill 22, which is the probation and parole officer caseload. In Alaska, two-thirds of offenders return to prison within 3 years, and at the current rate of recidivism and incarceration, we'll need to build a new prison in 2016. Legislators and communities have been dedicated to reducing the high rate of recidivism, but we have missed the important piece of supporting our probation officers. Probation and parole officers provide key services that can help recently released offenders reenter society smoothly and reduce recidivism. However, many probation officers are seeing an increase in caseloads, which diminishes the amount of time spent with each individual. According to a study by the Pew Center on the States, success rates among offenders are not very high at all. Actually, it's very low. More than 40% of probationers and more than half of parolees do not complete their supervision term successfully. In fact, parole violations account for about 35% of admissions in state prisons, and nearly half of local jail inmates were on probation or parole when they were arrested. And those are statewide studies. 64% here in Alaska with Department of Corrections inmates are nonviolent offenders, which is a Class C felony, property, and probation violators. And spending their time would cost us about $158.67 per day. That's hard prison bed. And almost $58,000 per year per inmate with these returning parole violations. A lot of these inmates are pretrial offenders, about 40% of them. They're awaiting bail and who have not been convicted of a criminal offense. And a lot of these are youthful males, minorities, and property offenders who have the highest rate of this recidivism. And currently, according to the Department of Corrections in a recent study, recent information that they presented to us yesterday, the parole officers and probation officers has an average caseload of about 85. In recent years, the number of studies for probation officers has grown to include the taking of DNA samples, ensuring the offender's compliance with the sex offender registry, and conducting home visits and address confirmation checks. Correction populations also have experienced tremendous growth for the past two decades. In an attempt to alleviate jail and prison crowding, probation caseloads are being populated with offenders that potentially pose greater community safety threats. And these offenders may be gang members, sex offenders, or domestic violence offenders, and require more officer time to provide adequate supervision, accountability, treatment, and enforcement of conditions in order to effectively modify their behavior and to effectively make them successful in reentry. A number of studies have examined practices of probation officers and demonstrated that medium and high-risk offenders garner the most benefit from intensive correctional interventions. Pro-social modeling and reinforcement, problem-solving, and cognitive techniques are core skills for reducing recidivism and probation supervision. If probation officers are spending less time with each individual due to the high caseloads, their ability to help offenders develop these skills is severely hampered. So our probation and parole officers provide key services that can help these recently released offenders reenter society smoothly and reduce this recidivism. And they're being seen as an increase in caseloads, which helps diminish that. When we look at some of the states, you know, we have 11 states now that have offered some sort of caseload limits to make sure that we don't have our corrections and our space isn't unnecessarily being populated. When we look at right now, our Department of Corrections is running about 101% of its general capacity. That's in despite of the 2002 opening of the Goose Creek Prison Facility. And that was a $250 million facility. If unabated, Alaska's annual 3% prison population growth will result in the need of a new prison here very shortly. As Alaska prisons population grows, and as we exceed the state's population's growth, so if you look at how our state population is growing, our prison population is actually growing four times that. So it's not just a matter of population, there's more people in Alaska, it's just that there's more incarceration that's happening. And one of the ways that we can prevent that incarceration rate going up is making sure that people are more successful coming out of the prison and not entering back in. In the last 20 years, Alaska incarcerated population more than doubled, growing 28% in the last decade alone. As of January 23rd, 2015 this year, Alaska's incarcerated rate was 5,216 offenders in prison. From 92 to 2012, prison growth in Alaska outpaced the state population fourfold, as I mentioned earlier. In the state of Texas, you know, we always look at Texas and trying to reduce the recidivism rate. They actually have a plan that takes a caseload of 60 as the maximum for maximum offenders and those that are not in specialized programs. Let me rephrase that. So they go from 60 down to 11. For those inmates that need super intensive supervision programs, their maximum caseload is down to 11. The most that they have is up to 60, and that's for, you know, nonviolent, easy offenders, if you will. We have 11 states. Those states are Arizona, Connecticut, Florida, Idaho, Kentucky, Minnesota, Nebraska, New Mexico, North Carolina, Texas, and Vermont. What our bill, House Bill 22, will do was set that maximum caseload at 60, which parallels with some of these other states, but most other states have reduced it down to 50 or even less than that based on the degree of crime that the person has committed. So House Bill 22 will limit the number of cases for each probation officer down to 60, and by passing this bill, Alaska will join 11 other states that limit probation officer caseloads to increase public safety and assist offenders with successful reentry into society. So thank you for the
Thank you very much for presenting the bill. What you may have said it and I may have missed it, but what's the typical caseload for probation officers now?
It's about 85 right now, currently.
About 85. That's for all types of. Do you have different caseloads based on the severity of the crime for which they were incarcerated?
Yes, there is. And through proper supervision, and the Department of Corrections really manages this as well, is making sure that people are specialized in the areas that they, whether it's sex offenders, whether it's drug and alcohol, depending on what type of crimes they are, that those that are specialized, those parole officers or probation officers are catering to the needs of those individuals. Per types of crime.
Well, I certainly agree with the intent of the bill. And I agree that we need to have smaller caseloads. You know, ideally, it'd be one-on-one, and that's never going to happen. But to me, the obvious question is, can we afford this? We are in serious financial trouble in the state of Alaska. We are trying to trim the budget drastically, but also responsibly. And how much would this cost to bring that caseload down?
Well, at this point, Mr. Chair, it is indeterminate. We have in the state of Texas, just to give you an example, Texas closed the prison in 2012 through making sure that they attacked the issue of recidivism. And limiting the caseloads of parole officers was a big part of that, which we missed in our recidivism reform bill last year. They had a savings of about $443 million annually through their prison system. In the state of Alaska, our Department of Corrections is the fifth largest part of our budget, you know, behind Health and Social Services, behind Department of Education and Early Development and Transportation, and I don't remember what the fourth one is. But it's one of our highest costs that we have going to the state. So the goal is to invest wisely, invest smartly, so that we're able to reduce the cost down the road. And by limiting the probation officers, this is one of those ways of doing it. Our probation officers are front line to these people that are exiting the prison system. And just a matter of public safety and a matter of their successes, these are, they hold the released prisoner, they hold them accountable. They end up being their coaches. They partner them up with resources necessary for their success. And when they are when there's too much of a caseload for these probation officers, the exiting prisoner is left oftentimes in the dark, and unfortunately, they end up committing crimes again, or they make technical errors that require them to go back to prison. And this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to avoid people going back to prison, making sure that they have successes. And it's one of those types of jobs that you just cannot take shortcuts with. You're not able to replace them with computers. It's intensive work, and it's one-on-work. It's FaceTime that really makes it a success.
Well, I would agree, you know, the best, you need a lot of one-on-one interaction, because these are difficult people. That's what got them incarcerated in the beginning. And so, as I understand it, you're basically saying we would save the money that this would cost by fewer parolees going back to prison with the costs associated with that. Is that correct?
That's correct. And there's all sorts of great studies. And one of the recommendations was with the 2015 Recidivism Reduction Plan was to have the Pew Report. There's a lot of studies that they've come out with. The most recent one, I think, is in 2011 or 2012. One of the recommendations from the report was to invite the Pew Public Safety Project to provide Alaska with free technical assistance to help identify factors in driving down Alaska's prison population growth. And they have a lot of studies that has to do with probation officers directly. The second highest reason for felony admission is probationary failure. And if we have the caseloads limited, we're able to focus on these people and give them the proper attention for their successes.
Thank you. I believe Reverend Tallarico and then Reverend Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see it looks like that we have 207 probation officers that work for the state, and we have 6,258 people on probation and parole, which comes out to an average of 30.3. Per case, and at least the numbers I have, it looks like where the problem really exists is in Anchorage. Is that right? That's where it's the probation officers have about 85 people per officer that they assist and take care of, and that maybe in some areas we might have probation officers that have, I think most of the rest of them, some are close to 60, but I think the Am I incorrect, or is the main problem right there in Anchorage?
There is a problem in Anchorage, but we also have higher rates in Nome and higher rates in Barrow, and which is a little bit higher than Anchorage is, I believe, currently right now. Depends on which study and which research brief you look at, but the most current study that we have right now, we just got yesterday. And I don't know if we have a chart that might show some of that, but... overall average is about 85 statewide. The lowest areas that we've had in the past is Bethel. Fairbanks. But it goes year by year, and it goes it's hard to determine which ones have the most. It just all depends on the natures of the crimes and then people being able to be able to get services. And with us also, we have people from the Department of Corrections, and I believe online we have Carrie Belden from the Department of Probation.
Yes, I've got the mayor. I've got Charles Stewart. I've got Warren Waters, both testified, and I have Terry Belden for corrections.
Yeah, okay. And she may be able to answer some of that herself, Carrie Belden.
Any further, Representative Tallarico?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had asked for this information yesterday. This is information as of yesterday for 2014. That's just what was provided me.
Yeah.
Before I go to Representative Keller, you're probably not the one to ask, but how do you handle parolees that come from the villages where... the parole officer, or probation officer, I should say, can't go out to some remote village, and the parolee can't come into town. How's that handled? If you don't have the answer, I'll ask somebody else who comes up here.
Yeah, and I will have to have the Department of Corrections answer that one for me.
Okay, Representative Keller.
Yeah, I thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering about, I think you portrayed that the ratio between inmates and probation officers is something that we can adjust with the expectation to get a reduction in recidivism. And I just want to ask you what What percentage or what impact do you think that has compared to the multitude of other things that address recidivism? As you know, you know we passed SB 64 last year, and it was focused on this very problem. In fact, part of SB 64 is an expansion of PACE statewide, which will automatically lead to it was funded, and there's money in there, you know, for a reform, a change in the probation department. But when you think about the whole context, you know, you look at an inmate, you've got so many things. You've got the electronic monitoring now that is coming up, and then you got this PACE, which is just getting off the ground, going statewide. We've got new risk assessment tools where we're trying to, you know, apply these tools to find out if the inmates are violent or not, to decide whether or not it's appropriate, you know, to incarcerate them. And we got treatment programs all across the state that are, you know, all designed and all focused on reducing the terrible recidivism rate that we have in the state of Alaska. We also have, this crosses over the other departments. Health and Social Services is involved, for example, in SB 64, in the Justice Commission, as they're looking at this as we speak. Actually, there's task force and everything. So when I look at the whole picture, it's hard for me to understand why you think that just putting a, you know, a cap on this ratio will do much. You know, if we, my impression is that the Department of Corrections is very committed to reducing recidivism, and they have no aversion to spending a little bit of money here to make sure that the money gets spent on probation officers wisely and appropriately. To just put a cap on. You know, when you look at the fiscal note, you got such a range of different kind of people that are locked up, you know, where I think in administrative probation situation, they say 200 is not unreasonable, you know, so to just cap a statute on that says you can't go over this, I think ignores what's going on. I think it ignores what we just did, and, you know, I just was. So I know it's more of a statement than not, but my real question is, Representative Tuck, please help me understand why this ratio is so critically important in the context of all the recidivism reduction efforts that are going on.
Thank you, Representative Keller, through the chair. When we look at the act, basically the bill itself, it just says the caseload of probation officers supervising probationers or the combined caseload of probation officer or parole officers supervising probationers and persons on parole as provided for A5 of this section may not exceed 60 persons except in temporary or extraordinary circumstances approved by the commissioner. So it's not entirely locked in. It's more of a vision statement. But I'm not saying that this bill is the answer to the whole recidivism.
Thank you.
It's a part of that, and I don't want to downplay what we've done already. What we've done already is excellent. And you look at the recommendations, what we did last year was a lot of those recommendations, and you mentioned one of them is the PACE. And, you know, PACE started in 2010, and just for everyone's information, that's the Probationer Accountability with Certain Enforcement Program. And what that was able to do is when somebody's violating a parole, that we have quick action to get them back into the programs rather than having these caseloads build up and not do anything with these guys. So I think that it's all part of that. It's not exclusive and it's not above, but it is one of those conditions that I think that was overlooked. When we look at the second highest reason for recidivism is probation violations, and we look at how much more successes we can have by looking at other states and looking at the research that's been done in limiting the caseloads for these. And just the, you know, the state of Texas, I'll break it down for you a little bit further on what they have. They have caseloads of 60 for any released inmate that were not in any type of specialized programs. So those are your low risk inmates. Then the caseload goes to 35 for those that are in special needs or offender programs. 35 also if they're in therapeutic community substance abuse aftercare treatment programs. And then 24 if they were sex offender programs. So we're reducing them all the way down to 24 for the sex offenders. And again, we don't want these sex offenders We want to make sure that they're successful. We don't want this to continue on in society, and we want to make sure that they don't get returned into prisons. 20 if they were electronically monitored, and again, 11 if they were super intensive supervision programs. And that's one of the things that you mentioned, electronic monitoring. That's under the supervision of our parole and probation officers as well, is electronic monitoring. So there's a lot more that they do. They partner up with different organizations to make sure that there's resources there available for these guys, because people coming out of prison, oftentimes they don't know where to go, where they can turn to. So it's coaching, it's in many ways counseling, but more importantly, it's accountability and bring those resources to the outgoing inmates.
Okay. Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up, please.
Representative Tuck, do you believe that Department of Corrections could has the resources right now to accomplish this without a bill? In other words, I guess mixed with that, do you think they will? I mean, I know that takes a judgment call on your part, but it sounds like you're presuming that they will overwork the probation officers, and I think that. Yeah, I think they have the resources now, and I think that they wouldn't. But
and through the chair, Representative Keller, yeah, if they have the resources now, then this bill being implemented should be an easy thing to do. Should be something that we want to have continuing on beyond this current administration. So they have done quite a bit of work over the years in bringing that down. I know the caseloads were as high as 120 at one time. Now we're down to 85. The goal is to get it down to 60.
How many?
At 120 at one point.
I'm not sure I understand this. If today, do we have the parole officers on board someplace who could bring that down to a caseload of 60 or less? Are there enough parole officers right now to do what you want, or would we have to hire more?
My understanding is that we have quite a few positions unfilled, but I'll let the Department of Corrections answer that one.
One of the other people might be able to answer that. Any other questions from the committee? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to go to Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One question. You mentioned in Texas there's been a differentiation between high-risk and lower-risk parolees, and that you want to maintain a lower ratio with those who are at higher risk of recidivism and committing a crime or violating terms of parole. Has there been any thought of trying to create a similar differentiation in this bill, for instance, a higher ratio for low-risk folks and a lower ratio for high-risk folks? Have you given that any thought?
Yes, thank you, through the chair, Representative Christ Tompkins. There is three levels that the Department of Corrections looks at currently, and I'll let them answer the question on this in 2 bits. Minimum, medium, and maximum. And so they divide that out as well. And I think my understanding is that they try to distribute that amongst the parole officers to because you can't just give one parole officer all of the maximum and expect them to have the same level of care of those at the minimum level. So I think just internally they try to do that already. I didn't want to start defining how they function and how they operate. I wanted to get them to have the flexibility with that, but just limit the caseloads to 60.
Thank you. Any further questions at this point? If not, I'm going to call on Charles Raymond Stewart. Do I have that correct? The probation officer, Department of Corrections. Are you online, sir, or in the room?
Yes, sir, I am.
Thank you. Please give us your name and weigh in on the testimony.
My name is Charles Stewart. Good morning, Chairman Lynn and committee members. My name is Charles Stewart. I'm a probation officer from the Department of Corrections at the Anchorage Complex. First, I would like to thank you for considering this bill. It's very important for probation officers. The goal for every probation officer is to work with offenders and to help them change their thinking behavior. Doing so will help them stay out of jail. Along with that, the goals of the Department of Corrections is to reduce recidivism. Unfortunately, we can't do that now. At this time, officers are doing so much required paperwork that they have very little time to work hands-on with offenders. The caseloads run anywhere from 80 to 100 or more. On February 18, 2015, a hearing was held at House Finance on the 2015 Recidivism Reduction Plan presented by the Recidivism Work Group. The committee presented a plan that is designed to reduce the amount of recidivism in our state. We believe this is a great plan, but we foresee one large problem. That problem is caseloads of probation officers. We have little time to work hands-on with the offenders because of the current paperwork load is overwhelming because of the number we supervise. At this time, we are primarily spending our time putting out fires started by a handful of difficult individuals, while a majority who could benefit from a regular face-to-face time with their probation officer and left without the guidance during the critical point of their lives. While we support the evidence-based approach to handling offenders, we must have more face-to-face time with each offender and our caseloads for the evidence-based program to work. The reports show offenders that all evidence-based programs contain sufficient one-on-one time with offenders. This is very important to work with each individual on their program plan. These programs are required more paperwork that is currently required because we must document very carefully and do more time with these individuals and their responses as we write it down. Unfortunately, failing to reduce caseload numbers and our hands-on contact with these individuals assure that our recidivism reduction efforts will fail. At the House Finance hearing, Ms. Gutierrez stated our current recidivism rate is at 63.19% as of fiscal year 2011. She also said that the Department of Correction is currently at 101% of general capacity, and we are increasing at an increase of 3% growth rate each year. A report from North Carolina dated March 2013 shows that a caseload of 60 is an ideal size caseload. Most of their caseloads are assigned around 66, but in real life exceed 70% because of positions being vacant, officers are unable to serve caseloads because of job injury, illness, medical leave, or military leave. As I said earlier, in ours, our caseloads are anywhere from 80 to 100. This is true, but what happens is that we end up having to pick up caseloads that aren't filled, and they add those to an individual's caseload. Now, their caseload is 80, but then they pick up 20 or 40 from another caseload in order to cover those individuals. So the numbers are still high. We also have caseloads that are around, South Carolina has special caseloads that showed in 2011's report of roughly about 30 individuals. Those would cover for mental health and sex offenders. Another piece to this is the cost. When the recidivism reduction plan was given to the House Finance Committee, it was stated that there are about 5,100 inmates and a cost of $158 a hard bed per day. Our goal is to cut recidivism by at least 15%, which will be a cost savings of roughly $27 million a year. It will cost money, but in order to make this type of savings, we must spend money in the beginning. But evidence from other states indicate that we will save sufficient money in the future. If we don't fix the problem now, unavoidable cost of incarceration will continue to climb higher and higher, keeping officers, keeping offenders out of jail by providing active probation officer supervision is the answer to reduce recidivism. I hope you'll pass this bill and push it forward for all officers. We're trying as hard as we can, but we need your help. We cannot do it with what we have as a caseload at this time. I'll answer any questions if you have any.
All right, thank you very much. Any questions from the committee? Thank you. Very good testimony. I have Warren Waters, probation officer, Department of Corrections. Are you online, sir?
Yes, I am, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, please introduce yourself and give us your testimony.
Yes, my name is Warren Waters. I've been a probation officer with the department for 9 years. As a state employee, I'm given 37.5 hours a week to work. And so that's, if you divide that by a caseload of even 85, that comes out to 26 and a half minutes per person per week. So I have 26 and a half minutes, and that's not including, you know, driving to court or going to a hound visit or, you know, all the data entry or the, you know, logging in your computer, but just 26 minutes a week to help these offenders, you know, to keep them out of jail, to keep them, to help them rehabilitate, to meet their needs and keep them on the right track. And it's very daunting when you think of you're trying to change a person's life spending less than 26 minutes a week. You know, can you raise a child in just 26 minutes a week? You can't. And that's what we're dealing with. We're dealing with people that, you know, they have a lot of needs. And we have to try to keep those and to meet those needs and to keep them out of jail or to keep them from coming back. The other thing is we have a lot of tools, the assessment tools like somebody talked about, to look at their custody levels and their criminogenic needs. Well, the LSI, which is our current assessment tool, it takes over an hour to do an LSI for each offender.
What's LSI mean? Yeah, I think you told me.
Level of service inventory.
Thank you.
It's the assessment tool the department uses to look at the criminogenic needs of each offender, and it gives them that minimum, medium, maximum custody level, so we know how to, what type of programming and treatment needs and all that. So, but that's the tool we use, and that's, you know, and it takes time to sit there and go through that with each individual. And, you know, again, we're talking 26 minutes a week to spend with the individual. So somebody asked why we need caps on caseloads if we're doing all this and we have all these other programs. And a short answer to that is the department's run by people. And we have directors, we have commissioners, we have supervisors. Some are appointed, some are not. But when there's a crisis or when there's a problem or when there's a budget shortfall, you know, they all want to save their jobs. And so when it comes down to it, they start cutting or they start making adaptions or they don't fill positions. We have lots of unfilled positions. And then that means everybody else has to pick up the slack. And that creates problems. So you can look at all the numbers on paper and say, well, you have enough probation officers to do the job. But in reality, the department's run by people and people manage and are allowed to manage, and so it can create problems at times. And so by having a, you know, a cap, then you have something where the line staff can go back and say, look, this is what we, you know, I'm not supposed to do more than this, and I need this much time to do it. And so we spend a lot of time putting out fires, or we spend a lot of time doing special projects. The director will say, hey, we need this number by the end of today. So you have to drop everything and provide this number. Oh, we, your institution's over capacity. We need to move, you know, X number of bodies to another institution. So instead of working on somebody's reentry packet and finding them housing and a job and all that, you're doing something else to put out a fire. And so that creates a lot of issues, and it gets very frustrating. And the other thing is, a lot of probation officers, you cringe when you open the newspaper, because you always hate to see that somebody committed a heinous crime, and you're hoping that they're not on your caseload. And that happens more than not. Most of the crimes that hit the newspaper, most people are on probation or parole. And that's just, you know, it's an unnerving effect that you, when you see that, and you know that, you know, if only you'd had maybe a few more minutes to spend with that person, maybe they wouldn't be in that situation. Or maybe, you know, you could have gotten them a better job, or you could have gotten them the housing they needed to live and fall back in. What was that? Did okay. I run out of time?
No, you say some more if you wish.
Okay. That's my spiel, and I hope you'll consider the case that I know it costs money. Everything costs money, and this is not the year to ask for money. But you know, we're dealing with people, and we're dealing with bad people, and we're trying to keep the community safe, and we're trying to help these people change their lives. And that's all we're asking for, is the time to spend with these individuals to change their lives, to make Alaska a better place. And that's all I have. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your testimony. You had mentioned there's several vacant positions. Why are those positions vacant? Is it because you can't find qualified people to fill them, or because of budgetary constraints, or what?
Well, not being a supervisor, I can't truly answer all the reasons. I can give what we think and what we guess. Some offices have high turnaround rates, and they just can't keep the people in there, and so they're always vacant because people are coming and going so much.
It may be
and some of that may be a management issue, and some of it may be the caseload issue, the work issue, and some are just not filled. We were told at the institutions that because of Senate Bill 64 last year, we were going to get 10 more positions. Well, those haven't been filled yet. So for the institutions, the field got 10 and there's 15, and the institutions were supposed to get 10, and it's been, you know, 9 months since the session ended, and those haven't been filled. So I can't say why those haven't been filled, but...
Well, you're probably not the person to ask. I do have the commissioners in the audience. I may drag him up here in a little bit. Reverend Stutes, you had a question?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We got cut off.
No, I have a question for you. This is, are you
No, they don't. So it's not even monthly. It just depends on the type of caseload. And
okay, anything else? Reverend Keller.
No.
Yeah, thanks, Warren. Thanks for your testimony. I missed it. You probably told us, but what is your personal caseload right now?
My caseload is roughly over 100.
Wow.
So it varies. I work at the institution, I work at the Anchorage Institution, Anchorage Correctional Complex, and we supervise roughly 1,100 inmates, because we're also responsible for the 4 halfway houses in the Anchorage area. And there's 10 of us, 10 probation officers at the Anchorage complex.
Thanks.
Thank you. Anybody, any other questions for this gentleman? Did anybody else online testify? Okay. Mr. Ron Taylor, could you come forward, please, if you wish, even if you don't wish. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ron Taylor, Commissioner for the Department of Corrections.
Thank you for coming in this morning. You've heard all the various testimony. I did have one question, but I asked the wrong person. Why do we have these vacant positions? You can't find qualified people, or the budget, or what? Qualified probation officers.
Mr. Chair, before I answer that, I first want to thank the sponsor for bringing this bill. Obviously, I know that he has a heart for the probation officers. and I really appreciate that. When he talks to our probation officers, he gets a real sense of what they're faced with on a day-to-day basis. The 12 vacancies, if it's on the probation and parole side that we have a required vacancy factor that we have to meet, which is around $1 million. So you're going to have at least 10 of those positions vacant just because of the vacancy factor. The other two would be because of transfers, or it could be because someone left one of the offices. I want to address a couple of things that I heard earlier. And Representative Tallarico started when he said, if he looks at the 207 and he uses the caseload activity that we have right now, then the caseload should be about 34, which is incorrect. This is part of the problem of looking at this caseload bill, that I want to make sure that we're all on the same page on it. We need to work together to get at what I really believe the intent of the bill is, which is we want to do a better job of helping our probation officers be more successful, helping our probation officers have more time to be able to deal with their caseloads. But when we're looking at the caseload activity of, I think you pulled out 6,200, which is the field caseload. Mm-hmm. You don't have the caseload activity of the institutional POs, the electronic monitoring POs, or probation, not probation, but the parole board, or classification. You don't have any of those caseloads that are factored in here. Those 207 probation officers also include supervisors. Some of those supervisors don't carry a caseload, to include chief probation officers. So these are policy decisions that we need to make sure we're all on the same page, because I wouldn't want you to look at this and say, wait a minute, you're already on the caseload. Why do we need this bill? Representative Keller, you asked earlier about, do we have the resources now? Absolutely not. And this is exactly why for Senate Bill 64, we asked for 25 new positions to do the things that the sponsor was asking us to do in that bill. The 10 PO positions that are assigned for the institutions, it wasn't scheduled to come online until the next fiscal year. It wasn't set to come online in the first. This is exactly why we staggered it, because we knew we needed time to, one, get training done for our probation officers in the institution, and then to begin to work with them in terms of the risk needs assessment to help them transition from where they were. Now, I will say this. Caseloads have dropped as a result of the bills that Representative Tuck and even Senator McGuire has introduced over the past 4 or 5 years. These are things that the department has really taken seriously, and you've seen the caseload go from 120 to 85. Is it where it should be? Absolutely not. We'd be the first one to say to you, that's not our desired caseload, but what we're able to do is work within our system to find some efficiencies. Unfortunately, we haven't done that on the institutional side, and there's some work that we need to do on the institutional side. We need to go in and look at the type of cases that they're dealing with, and all of the administrative paperwork requirements that our institutional probation officers on the line that are talking about, those are exactly the things that we need to start focusing on after the session is done, so that we can get a truer picture of what those caseloads really are versus what we have right now. And I think that those are some of the things that we're working even now to correct, working to make sure that our department is as efficient and as effective as possible. And then you asked, Mr. Chair, about the workout in the rural areas.
Yes.
The VPSOs are who we utilize quite a bit in those rural areas to work with, because we don't have the resources to go out there.
So they have VPSO act as a de facto parole officer?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. We would use them and work with them in the local communities to do checks for us, to do breathalyzers, and to make sure that that person is abiding by their conditions. And if not, they alert us as probation and parole.
What percentage would you guess would be the number of parolees living out in remote villages?
You know, Mr. Chair, I don't know if I have the number of remote. I'd have to go through and add them up. I can. Well, but you're talking about villages. You're not talking about that on a caseload, because we could have a person that's supervised by Anchorage Probation that's out in a rural area. So I'd really have to look and get those numbers for you.
Well, it doesn't pertain too much to this particular bill. That was just a matter of curiosity. And I don't know how you can handle it, because they can't afford to come in and you can't afford to go out. So we have, but I think the VPSO is a good fill-in in that position. Okay. Any questions, Mr. Taylor, Reverend Tallarico?
I'd just like to ask Mr. Taylor, if I provide you this information that I was given, can you give me the correct information?
Could you ask the question again?
If I provide the information, Mr. Taylor, I can email it to you later. Maybe you can give me better numbers than evidently what I have.
Through the chair, Representative Tallarico, absolutely. I can get you the institutional numbers, and because that's what you're really missing in our electronic monitoring caseload numbers as well.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Okay. Anybody else on the line to testify? Anybody else in the audience to testify? With that, we'll close public testimony, bring it to the committee. Just speaking for myself, and we'll invite comments from everybody else on the committee. I'm very much in favor of reducing the caseload. Every once in a while, somebody wants to do a bill, a totally different subject, not totally perhaps, but they want to reduce the student-teacher ratio in the classroom because, the fewer students a teacher has to teach, better the outcome might be, and I'm in favor of that too, but that requires paying for more teachers, and more classrooms, and so on and so on. And that might be a little similar to this. I'm strongly in favor of reducing the caseload. I'm concerned about the cost of it, and I know trying to figure out how much that would lower the recidivism rate is like trying to nail jello to the wall, because you really don't know. Nobody knows. Each thing is particular. So I have some concerns about that, primarily, but I am in favor of reducing the caseload. Reverend Keller?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah,
it looked like you were going to speak there. So
No. I do want to make a comment, but I just want to comment that anything with a fiscal note this session, you pointed this out, and I think the probation officers did too. It's an uphill battle. We're in very dire straits economically, basically, personally. We just can't spend money. It's as simple as that. I think you indicated that recidivism is something that drives our budget cost, and that's partly true, but I just want to put it in a context. The context is that it's really not very much of an item compared to, for example, Medicaid expansion cost, which is, Medicaid growth cost, I should say, not to confuse it with the expansion fight, but the cost growth projections, when you look at them, it's going to eat up our, state budget here in very short order. I can get you graphs on that. But the reason that's significant is that also it's kind of in the context of the fact that we passed SB 64 as we speak. There is a Justice Reform Commission that is looking at all this stuff in great detail. In fact, it meets today across the street. And it's getting ahead here a little bit to take a top-down cap, I think, and put it on here and say this is the dial that we're going to use to turn down this recidivism rate when there's so many other factors. It's a stretch for me to think of a top-down cap put on in a statute as something that will really have any effect either on the effectiveness of our probation officers, or on the recidivism rate. So I'm pretty hesitant. That's enough. Thanks.
Okay, Reverend Tallarico, any comments?
No, sir. Thank you.
Reverend Stutz, any comments?
Mr. Chair, can I address the fiscal note just briefly?
I beg your pardon? Any closing comments, Reverend?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In 2007, Texas took on a bipartisanship attack on the recidivism and on prisons. And though they had a series of bills, House Bill 1, House Bill 1678, House Bill 3736, which was the parole officers. So they took on four bills. One of them, standalone, was the limitation of probation officers and parole officers. And they were faced with spending $500 million on new prisons, or to invest $240 million, which ended up saving them an average of $443 million in that biennium, and because they're 2 year, they meet every other year, and so it saved them $443 in that biennium. And so they were able, by 2012, 5 years later, to actually close a prison. And this was one factor of four that they looked at. That's how important it was. And when you look at, there's a couple of studies. The authors of the Reduced Caseloads Improved Probation Officers' Outcomes, that's the title of the report, which was published in 2012, in the Journal of Crime and Justice, they studied the impact of reduced caseloads to an agency with officers fully trained in implementing evidence-based practices, which we're doing right here at the Department of Corrections, and along with supervision strategies. The authors evaluated the intervention's effect on recidivism and technical revocations of probations and estimated that the smaller caseload reduced the rate by recidivism by roughly 30%. And that's what the studies had demonstrated. And technical violations increased by 4%. That's because there is more oversight that's taking place. We're able to catch these things. So they were able to reduce it by 30%. Another study done in 2011 by the Crime and Justice Institute, they generally state that results suggest that reducing probation officer caseloads can reduce criminal recidivism among medium to high risk offenders, and that's what we want. We want to keep our public safe. In Florida, in Polk County, researchers found that intensive supervision with small caseloads reduced the likelihood of criminal recidivism by 26% for all offenses, and that's violent, property, and drug, and by 45% when drug was removed from that. And so you look at the opportunities here for the state to save money. I mean, really, you have to ask, you know, what are the costs of not doing something like this? And when you look at the caseloads that even with, for example, the Office of Child Services, we know that there's a high turnover rate in that area, and it has to do with the workload, and it has to do with people wanting to succeed in helping others. And when people don't succeed in helping others, they get discouraged and they leave. And that's the same situation that we have with our parole officers and probation officers, is they want to see these people succeed. They're passionate people, and if we don't give them the resources, then we're going to continue to have a high turnover rate, and or even increase the turnover rate. And that's what we don't want to see. We want to be able to see people receiving the services they need to be able to receive to be successful once they leave our prison system. So one of the things that Texas also did in their House Bill 3736, which was specifically toward parole officers, probation officers, is they actually ended up with a zero fiscal note. And how did they do that? Basically, they just asked for a report to be reported back to the legislature year after year to find out what resources they needed to do to make that happen. So the original version of the bill, making that maximum caseload policy mandatory, the fiscal note at that time, they were expecting to be about $30.3 million. But the revised fiscal note indicated there would be no significant cost to the state because of the reduction in the recidivism and being able to reduce the amount of prisoners. The change to the bill required the Texas Department of Criminal Justice to submit a report to the Legislative Budget Board each year on why the department failed to meet the guidelines and stating the amount of money required to meet those guidelines. So that's how they got it down to a zero fiscal note, eventually passing, eventually saving the state of Texas money and actually closing down a prison. So I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee for hearing House Bill 22.
I'd like to thank you also for presenting the bill, Mr. Taylor, and all the probation officers. You guys have a very tough job no matter what your caseload is, and it's really a tough job. I believe we have an indeterminate fiscal note on this. Is there any foreseeable way to get this down to a zero fiscal note? if we could do that, I would really like to see that happen. Is there any possibility, do you suppose?
Well, I would like to work with the Department of Corrections on looking, again, at what Texas did as a model to figure out how we can get that fiscal note down to where we can start making these necessary investments to,
I'd like to see
save
that.
Us money.
Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think there's any question that people or this committee believes that maybe we need a little help in that direction and that we need to have some help for our probation officers with fewer cases. But if there's if the Justice Reform Committee is addressing this or reviewing it, it would seem to me that this bill might be just a step ahead of its time. Because from my limited exposure thus far in the legislature, it seems that from all the presentations we've had, we have commissioners that oversee all these departments, and none of the departments are working together. So, if we could bring the departments under one umbrella where they're all working together, and so it would seem to me that the Alaska Justice Reform Commission might be instrumental in addressing this issue amongst others, where we can all work together and bring it together and maybe have a zero fiscal note. So I'm a proponent of the idea, but I just think it's a little premature currently for this.
Thank you. Any other comments from the committee?
I just want to make sure I understand the statement, Mr. Chair. Premature because we have other people looking at things, or premature because we don't know the results, or I'm trying to figure out what makes it premature?
I think, through the chair, I think premature in the respect that maybe we ought to wait and see what the Justice Reform Commission comes back with in so far as their recommendations, and then we can approach them with this. And if they don't address the probation officer situation, put it in the mix. Let them address it with the whole problem.
Any other comment, anybody? If there's no objection from the committee, I'd like to hold this bill while we explore the zero fiscal note possibility. Again, I'm strongly in favor of reducing the caseload. It's the fiscal note that bothers me and the environment in which we operate. But I want to thank you and everybody for testifying on the bill today. Our next meeting, and Mr. Terry, you might as well just stick around until Thursday, because Thursday we'll be having close testimony on this bill. I can't think of the number. Thursday, this committee will have a confirmation hearing for Sheldon Fisher, Commissioner Assignee with the Department of Administration, for Ron Taylor, I've heard of you, sir, and Department of Greg and Greg Fleener, Lieutenant Governor Designee. That's for Thursday. Any other comments or questions from the committee? If not, thank you, and we are adjourned.